Imagine that you're living out the plot of A History of Violence, right? And Ed Harris shows up at your door and tells you something about your spouse's history, right? What is the worst thing for you culturally that you could find out from you about your spouse by Ed Harris at the front door? Like, what do you think? This is more of a Ryan scenario, and I wish he was here, but what is the worst thing that you could get history of violence on in your own home?
What do you mean by culturally?
I mean, like, you don't, not like, I mean that this is kind of supposed to be funny. Like, oh, my husband's an axe murderer. No, that's not interesting. Oh, my husband was a key figure in the swing dance revival of the 90s. That's a problem.
That's it for me. If somebody came up and they were like, "Hi, I have some terrifying news about your significant other."
Like your buddy's old business partner shows up, but it turns out it's your buddy's old business partner and he's wearing a zoot suit. And he's
Right.
like, "Hey, buddy, where's your zoot suit?"
If
And you're like, "No."
somebody shows up at the door and they
It's
said,
Ed Harris. Specifically, it's Ed
if
Harris.
well, first of all, if Ed Harris shows up at my front door, I'm running.
He's desiccated, man.
It's his
You
house
can
now.
evade him pretty quickly.
He's terrifying. He just
Okay.
looks like Red Skull now.
Okay.
If he shows up at my door and he says, "Your significant other was a contract killer for the United States government from 1995 to 2002," I would say, "Whoa, whoa, okay,
He's not a drone.
we gotta have, yeah,
I'm married to a drone.
we gotta have a conversation, right? We gotta have a discussion. We need to have some disclosure. I have questions." If somebody showed up and said, "Your significant other participated heavily and willingly and was around multiple wallet chains in the swing revival of the 1990s," I would really be more disturbed by that.
Okay.
Far more disturbed.
I forget why I started thinking about
Yeah.
this.
Jason, what would it be for you, if anything, that you're just like, "I cannot be party to that"?
I mean that's hard to top. Swing dancing is sort of inexplicable in hindsight. Like the Swingers, the movie, sure. But
Well, there were the
beyond
Gap
that,
commercials. The Gap commercials didn't help.
there was ska adjacent, and ska sort of brought along swing. There were numerous culprits in swing dancing being a thing for like a year.
Yeah. If at any point you actively encouraged a zoot suit riot, I have a problem with that.
Anyway,
Yes.
what did you want to talk about?
Your mother, 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 mother,
What?
Welcome to the Shutdown
That's
Foldcast.
feeble.
You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I am Spencer Hall. I am joined this week, as I am most weeks, by across the table from me, Holly Anderson. Hello.
Don't tell them where I am.
I know. And Jason Kirk. Say hello, Jason.
I am also across a table.
Very true.
That is true. Also on the ones and twos, our producer Michael Serber. Currently, this is, you can't see this because this is an audio format, but readers, listeners, and watchers, currently wearing a resplendent Clemson shirt.
He's so normal, though.
It the fold of it, it the, when I very first saw this Clemson, I believe it's polo that Serber has on, it looked to me like a Clemson kimono. And I was briefly breathless at the thought of such a thing and the dojo that Serber must have conquered in order to in order to win this garment,
It's
like
the
one of
kimono.
fight at a Hardee's and was
Also,
awarded.
yeah, it's a Will Smith movie on Disney Plus for sure. If we want to get into the full story of how I got this kimono.
How you won the kimono.
Yeah, but it ends with me saying, I gotta get me one of these. It just says that at some point.
You had to drop kick Danny Ford through a window.
That can't be done.
You had to fight CJ Spiller on the roof of a Hardee's.
That was easy. That was the easiest part. He is fast, but it was
he's fast. But you know fast, what?
I'm not sure if winning the Clemona would require defeating like all of Clemson, though.
That's how you get it. Dabo's had the Clemona for years. You know how Dabo's kind of hippie? He's kind of shaped like a Weeble Wobble.
He's got that in common with Saban.
He does. Yeah, they're
like they can both fill out a cocktail dress in like a half shell '40s nightclub situation.
Dominant, athletic managers who both have wide set hips for a man. And so I think that's the secret to why he has the Clemona that when knocked down, he just wobbled back up, right? Just reset. And that's why he got it.
Folks, you can reach Spencer at 38 Godfrey on Twitter.
Thank you. Thank you. I value all of their feedbacks, all of them. Holly, because we're a college football podcast, we like to talk about space.
The cicadas are just
there
to bolster this claim.
They are. Cicadas are the aliens.
Do you want me to do the whole thing I just did over again?
Sure.
Folks, it's Spencer's birthday, and to celebrate, the haint is being especially haintful today. Ryan Nanny is also out on vacation, and his serene and stabilizing influence is absent from the show. But all I wanted to say is, you may have heard in the Dad Disasters episode a few weeks ago, we had one kid write in with a submission of his own father. I submit that this is not a disaster of any kind, but rather an example of how to live. He said his dad has 12 Twitter accounts, and not for the reason most of us have 12 Twitter accounts to cyberbully local politicians. His dad has 12 Twitter accounts because whenever he forgets the password, he just makes a new one. They all follow one account, and that account is NASA. And I hope that dad is having a fabulous day wherever he is, kicked back in the good chair, scrolling the tablet if he's on a tablet, and just looking at these Webb telescope pictures going, boys, it's all been worth it. This is why we suit up every day and follow NASA.
That's why I do what I do.
I hope this is all he talks about for the rest of the year.
Just clogging next door with complaints about one dog that won't stop pooping on his lawn and lauding the efforts of NASA, right? I predict this dad, by the way, has problems with multiple government programs, but it's like, NASA, you're cool.
I joined Nextdoor.
Congratulations.
I feel bad about that, but I joined it because there is a robust and thriving plant swap community in Atlanta, and I had never run across one of those like amazing Nextdoor exchanges before because I have everything muted except for the plant swap groups. But we ran across one this week that I would like to read aloud.
Please.
Because it skips from, 15 hours ago. It's relevant to us because it involves Panama City. Had to cancel our 30A beach rental for the week of August 13th, August 20th, and I'm trying to get it rented. A couple sentences about details of the property. Here's how many bedrooms. It's got a pool. And here's where the beach is. If you're looking for a last-minute beach vacation, send me a message. The owners are a little flexible with dates. 15 hours ago. Now, there's a drop-down that you can click. It says, see 14 previous comments. I can't see these comments, but 12 hours later, here's a guy saying, in no instance that I know of has a victim themselves actually fended off a chimp. If a chimp attacks you, you need to get armed help immediately. This is your only real hope. And I looked at this and my finger went towards the C14 previous comments. And you know what? I stopped. I stopped because I'm going to enjoy the destination and just skip the journey on this one. Because no matter how it got here, it can't possibly live up to where it ended.
That's amazing.
I'm simming through this Nextdoor discussion and just getting to the part about Pole Assassin's summer vacation.
Shouts out to the web, by the way, making the Hubble look like a piece of shit.
All of this trash talking of Hubble. Oh, my God. Like, oh, here's the Hubble telescope over here. And the Hubble's like, pick me. Pick me.
I was doing the best that I could at the time.
It feels unnecessary. I don't feel like they had to do the Hubble like that.
It's like an old TV, zero sentiment attached. The minute your old TV is no longer up to snuff, you're like, garbage, trash.
But I have this sentiment. I'm like, the Hubble is my three. The Hubble is literally 3 yards in a cloud of dust, the telescope.
I would use it as a garden decoration at this point. Man. Put it on.
I think within a few years, there'll be like throwback Hubble nostalgia. Like, yeah. Nah, like you know, aesthetics change. And like sometimes it's cool for something to look like really shitty in 80s. The number one TV show right now. Or, you know, it's like, oh, these people look cool in the 60s. At some point, we'll be like, man, I miss 90s space. I miss when everything was just kind of a blur. But it was a really far away blur. Like, yeah, there'll be Hubble nostalgia. I thank the Hubble for everything it gave us. And I think appreciation will return to it in due time.
That does make me feel better. The blur is so soothing.
Man. I would turn it into a coffee table. And I'd put legs on it.
I'm not saying the web's not incredible. Listen, I'm not saying this web's not incredible, but I'm like, we can appreciate the web now without being like, look how shitty the Hubble is.
No way. I'm firmly on screw that. I'm firmly like...
I don't know why I'm doing a Muppet voice for these people either. But...
The Hubble is the Bob Cousy of...
Wow.
Of intergalactic telescopes, right?
Like, no, the Bob Cousy is one of those, is like an Earthbound.
This is more like an Andre Kirilenko
telescope.
Hey, speaking of Earthbound, did y'all see Elon's rocket exploded?
I think if you had real confidence in your product, you'd test it personally. You'd put yourself on that launch pad, sir. Get on out there. Follow the example of General Nedelin. Put a lawn chair up next to the rocket and survey the business yourself.
Spencer, what happened to General Nedelin?
Never mind. He died serving his country gloriously.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday.
You want to talk about college football? Jason has some college football. That didn't mean to sound accusatory.
I would.
So we at times remember that college football seasons are inbound, and this is a year in which that is again true. College football is likely happening within a month or so. Mm-hmm. So we are going to do weekly-ish, conference-ish, preview-ish things as we have done in the past. We've done this in many ways. This time around, let's be honest about the actual amount of research that we've put into the various conferences around the land, particularly since this one is the ACC. We all know only one team really matters in it, and the other teams just sort of beat each other. That's how it's gone for about 30 years now.
So we're doing a Wake Forest episode.
Yeah.
The name of the one team changes from time to time, but that's how the conference works. So I have gathered 8 conference contenders. Schools that, you know, could win the ACC. And I think it would be, it would really demonstrate our knowledge and awareness of this conference if we were to collectively select a team to root for this year in the ACC. I have assembled 8 blind resumes, all right?
Yes.
And I think how we'll do this is I'll present pairings. We'll do it tournament style. And the 3 of you can collectively decide which team wins each pairing, okay? Yes, Holly.
When you say root for, how far into the season do we have to take this? Are we riding this to December?
Yeah, I think so. I think this will be our official rooting interest for the year. Like this.
Okay. I like this.
If this school wins the conference, we will look like geniuses, okay?
As usual, yeah.
I will say, just to make it interesting, Clemson is not on the board because, let's be honest, that's a little easy, okay?
Excellent.
So, just a few things. These are all based on old resumes. So, last year, 4 ACC teams finished in the final AP2 Top 25. 2 ACC teams at top 30 scoring defenses, 5 at top 30 scoring offenses. That's sort of a general. That's how the ACC stacked up last year, okay?
Okay.
The first team on our list finished the year number 14, won a game in Miami, lost a game in Virginia, top 25 in scoring, beat 2 SEC teams, lost to a service academy, and their alumni includes Tim Cook of Apple. They are up against a team that also finished in the top 20, top 15 scoring offense, undefeated in overtime, undefeated against teams from outside Florida and Pennsylvania, And their head coach has been on the San Diego Chargers staff, of course.
Jason, that doesn't narrow it down at all.
No, that's a group of 14,000 men.
Their alumni includes the author of Diary of a Wimpy Kid. So, which of these two schools will advance?
Yeah, but...
I am going... My instinct pulls me towards the Tim Cook school because his other school is Auburn, and it can't possibly be that bad, this other one. It can't possibly be as tortuous as rooting for the Christian Chaos Magician Academy.
I'll take Pitt because I think one of those teams is Pitt. I think it's the first one.
Well, that's not the game.
But I'll take the first one.
That's the Tim Cook school?
I'll Riverside you. I'll take the other one.
Spencer's
Jason,
taking...
would you like to explain the rules again?
All right. So since Spencer is trying to make some action.
We're picking one team for all of us.
Oh, for all
Spencer's
of
taking
us.
Both. Okay. Spencer, hang on. Spencer's taking both. So Cerber, it's on you to split the tie.
I'm taking the second team because no one wanted it.
Okay. The second school advances in our ACC tournament. The second pairing on our list, the first school, a top 10 scoring defense, went 500 against the state of Virginia, ranked in the AP top 15 for a few weeks, but didn't reach bowl season. Their alumni include Zach Galifianakis, who did not graduate. Okay. They're up against a team that finished in the top 20. All four of its losses were by a single score. Went 1-1 in neutral site games, played in the other team's home state, lost to three different Mack Brown schools, and beat FSU. Their alumni includes Woodrow Wilson, who did not graduate.
I was really loath to take any institution that accepted Zach Galifianakis, but Woodrow Wilson's way worse. We got to go with the first one, right?
I have no option but to go with the first
one. We can't associate ourselves with Woodrow Wilson in any way.
Okay.
Serves, what you think?
Zach Galifianakis is from the county next to mine in North Carolina, so I would have picked him. I also know which school that is, and I like the idea of them making it as far as possible and not getting it.
I just did it. I just realized that we could Floridaize him by calling him Zach Gacky Falacky.
Yeah.
And I suggest that we do that from now on.
Next pairing. All right. This school had a top 20 scoring defense, lost to Miami. Two All-Americans, but only two players drafted. Lost a game on the CBS family of networks, and their alumni includes James Webb of the telescope fame.
It's got to be that school. I'm taking that school.
Okay. The school they are up against played four North Carolina teams, but only defeated three of them. Had a top 20 scoring offense. Undefeated in games against teams from South Carolina and Virginia. And their head coach has also been on the San Diego Chargers staff.
Shit.
Alumni.
Again.
Their alumni includes World War II's second best U.S. fighter pilot.
Hmm.
I'm going with my heart says school A again. Yeah. I got to follow my heart to space.
I'll go with A.
My heart's real stupid, but it wants to go to space.
I would point out that the first the number one ace in World War II was again Richard Bong.
I thought it was a cartoon
Dick Bong.
Dog.
Dick Bong.
Man.
You're gonna kill whoever you're allowed to kill if your name is Dick Bong.
This is like the aerial version of Don't Fight the Short Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that other fighter pilot across from me's name? Dick Bong. You're like, I'm bailing out immediately.
Fuck. Oh, God. Oh, the Jason Bourne gif. Oh,
it's
God,
Dick
it's
Bong.
Dick Bong.
My God, it's Jason Bong.
Bong.
What's up, Denny's? Thanks for coming out and seeing my band, Dick Bong.
And then when he's like, you know, someone gets a lucky strike and he's shot down and he has to, like, espionage his way out of Germany. And he's, like, adopting disguises and he's like, name's Bong. Dick Bong. And they're like, that is a fake name. That's a fake name. You're a spy. And it's like, perfect identification. My name is Dick Bong.
But these French ladies back here whispering, oh, ho, Richard Bong.
The Japanese are just sitting there after they captured him going, so what did he say his name was? Dick Bong. Bullshit. bullshit.
We have ways of making you dick, Mr. Yeah. Bong.
Tell me your real name.
But the French would be fooled.
Yeah, the French would be like, it's a very sexy name. Extremely sexy.
Next matchup. The first school in this list lost to Florida State, but went 4-0 against the state of North Carolina. Their head coach has multiple BCS Bowl wins in the resume. All their losses were on the road. Arguably the best season in school history. And their alumni includes one of the most famous country singers. They are up against... They're up against a team that finished number 18, had a six-game winning streak, the nation's number 23 hardest schedule, lost to Notre Dame and Clemson, but beat a top 20 team and a national champion head coach. Their alumni includes Jerry Falwell Jr.
Okay, I know what the second school is, and I'm not feeling it.
Again, I think we go first. Mm-hmm. First school.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have our final four here, okay?
Very North Carolinian of us.
I'll just go by alumni for this one, okay? The first pairing will be Diary of a Wimpy Kid versus Zach Galifianakis.
Can you repeat those criteria again?
The rest of their resumes or just the alumni?
Just the two teams. Can you read the list of considerations again?
The team's still in the running, or?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. The complete resumes, or what?
Well, no, when you put it that way, it kind of sounds unreasonable.
So let's go.
This
final four matchup is the author of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, that person's school, versus Zach Galifianakis' school. I can read any football specific details you might like, but
I would go with Zach Galifianakis' school.
Cerber knows which school this is, so I want to defer to him.
I too know what school this is.
Well,
yeah,
shit.
This is not the final, correct?
This is not the final.
Yeah.
All right,
Zach Galifianakis.
I'll take Zachy Falacky.
Okay. I think I already know who's going to win this one. These two schools, they both did a lot of football stuff. They're alumni. It's James Webb versus a famous country singer.
Famous country singer just sounds like such a trap.
That's such a trap because you're like...
Like Toby Keith's a famous country singer. Not that he went to college, but...
Like, do I want to go ahead and sign up for the neo-fascist yee-yee guy or James Webb who made a telescope? I'm going to go ahead and go with James Webb because, again, it's out with the Hubble gang and with the Webb gang.
James Webb!
All right, and this one, I think it's pretty easy how this one's going to go. Zach Galifianakis versus James Webb.
James Webb.
James Webb.
Space!
Eat shit, State.
James Webb. That's right. NC State lost in the finals.
That's new and different.
The criteria cited that was 1957 NC State, an ACC champion, despite losing to William and Mary. And they were indeed ranked highly all season, but they didn't reach bowl season because their basketball team had gotten the entire athletic department banned from the postseason, as described in the Sinful Seven. Your winner is 1963 UNC, which lost a bowl game against Air Force on CBS proper. two schools in the finals were...
That? Huzzah, the Blue Bonnet Bowl.
Two schools in the finals were 2001 Maryland. Yes, that was an ACC champion. Ralph Friedgen, head coach, was indeed on the San Diego Chargers coaching staff. The teams they lost to included Florida and FSU. I mentioned they were also undefeated against teams from outside Pennsylvania. They did not play anyone from Pennsylvania.
That was, if I remember correctly, the first team to win the ACC besides Florida State after they joined. Like, Florida State just kicked the shit out of everyone for 11 years.
The first team to win the ACC outright.
Outright, yeah, because there was a share with NC State or Tech.
That would be a team that did not make it out of the opening round, 1995 Virginia. Their alumni includes Woodrow Wilson, who briefly attended. The three Mac Brown schools they lost to were Texas, FSU, and UNC, coached by Mac Brown. Let's see. The other Final Four team was 1969 South Carolina, an ACC champion, their only conference title in school history.
Their only one. Their only one in the entire goddamn history of the program.
The let's see. The BCS Bowl wins in Paul Dietzel's history were the Sugar and Orange at LSU. And the famous country singer, of course, would be all of Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, well, we're just going to have to let her cry.
teams that lost in the first round, 1989 Virginia, Jerry Falwell Jr., of course, gave that team away. The national championship head coach they defeated was Steve Spurrier. Again, that was an ACC champion.
I decline.
Tim Cook, his other alma mater, Duke. 1954 Duke, an ACC champion. The SEC teams they beat were Tennessee and Georgia Tech, and they lost to two service academies. And the final school on this list was 1990 Georgia Tech, an ACC champion and co-national champion. Their Chargers connection was Bobby Ross, of course. And, World War II fighter pilot Thomas McGuire finished number two, unlike arguably Georgia Tech this year. So thanks to the strength of 1963 UNC's resume and the work of NASA director James Webb, who had a telescope named after him, North Carolina is the Shutdown Fullcast's ACC pick this year. That can't be good.
Thank God.
We have lost audio again, but I think what we have established by now is that they'll be back soon, Serber.
Yes.
So let's just see what happens if we just keep it rolling.
Let's just look at their confused faces and continue.
Let's look at preseason ACC football poll 2022. I want to see how against the grain we're going here.
Carolina's supposed to be really bad this year, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because of Sam Howell being gone.
Yeah.
Is Downs back? They had a receiver, Josh Downs, I felt like.
Athlon picks them to finish third in the Coastal Division.
That's basically winning it.
Ooh, in the division?
Yeah. Hey, y'all. Welcome back.
Yeah. If you're third, you're... Yeah.
Hey.
The ACC, if you're third, you're first.
SI picks them to finish sixth in the conference. So, yeah, we didn't reach that far, I don't think.
Yeah, sixth in the ACC is such a long shot, though.
It's either second or 13th.
Yes.
The fine line. I can't wait for a mathematical scenario in the ACC where in the final month, somebody in 1 week goes from sixth to first. Just through a combination of multiple overlapping losses. I want some sort of thing where something one weekend just takes somebody. It was like, Pitt out of the running. Froop, Pitt now in first.
I think this is the year, if there ever was one, because the Coastal is so Coastal. Like this is the final time I think we get it too.
One more run, baby.
Yeah.
One more run.
This is like the greatest hits tour.
Coastal's got to go out with a bang. A really stupid limp bang.
Yeah.
It's a limp.
Yeah. It just captures the attention of every sports writer for 2 months. And then they lose to Clemson, by 50.
Hey, listen, man. Sports writers are just like us. We got to entertain ourselves somehow.
Just a series of stressed out guys at the orgy going, it's okay, it happens to everyone. That's what the Atlantic
what?
Is.
What?
Happens to every guy.
Basically.
Yeah. It's my turn. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Do orgies have turns, or is it like a dance-off situation where you just got to jump in where you feel
it? Are you asking if it's a real-time strategy game or turn-based?
I'm asking if it's like Double Deck or if it's like...
Is it
kinda.
Is it Age of Empires?
I guess that is what I'm asking.
Yeah. Is it D&D?
Folks, sound off in the comments. Call in at 704 SOL cast. That's 704 Soul cast. Hail to Ra, the sun god. And tell us what you think.
Are there Zerg rushes? Or or is this a one more it's 3 a.m. haven't won yet, one more turn situation?
I'm going to need you to say one more thing, and I need you to just whisper at my ear, construct more pylons. Construct more pylons.
Well, that's upsetting.
That's kind of how it works, I think.
Yeah. I wanted to point out another thing that I realized this week about the ACC, because naturally I was thinking about the ACC because SEC Media Days are next week. By the way, SEC Media Days are next. SEC Media Days are next week.
I can't know.
You said SEC Media Days are next week, which made me think about the ACC.
It did, yeah.
Why?
Because I was thinking, well, who am I going to see there who's a player who's in their, like, sixth year? And then I thought, who's the most sixth-year player playing, even though I looked it up and they're only 22 years old? Who is the person who I now suspect has not only legal residence there but may own property in the community? That is correct. The guy who is now the seventh-year star, the ninth-year wonder of all wonders in the ACC. We did lose Sam Howell, but we kept a Sam Hartman. That's right. Mm. Sam Hartman of Wake Forest, who's now been there for, I know he's 22. It feels like he's been there for 4,000 years.
24 gorgeous years.
24 of
24 carat magic.
Just deacon along like a demon. That's what Sam Hartman's been doing. But yeah, he is back for another year. I hope he applies for another year of eligibility, because why not? You're Sam Hartman. Lean hard into the Sam Hartman of this.
So he's going to be one of the last college football players born in the previous millennium.
Oh, God.
He was welcome.
This isn't getting less disturbing.
He was born in July 1999.
This is more upsetting than the orgy detour.
Well, Lou Headley, as long as Lou Headley's around too, because remember, Lou Headley is actually 29 years old. We're not joking. He is 29 years old.
That's true.
Miami's punter, who, if you will remember, among other things, owned a tattoo shop at one point in his life prior to ever getting to the University of Miami.
Wait, I don't know about this.
Lou Headley? I will share Lou Headley facts.
I mean, I know he's 29. I don't know about the tattoo shop.
Yes. He had an entire life before he joined the, first of all, he worked as a scaffolder. If anyone familiar with Love Island will know scaffolders are a type.
Is he from Essex? Yeah.
Yeah, they are a type. Lou Headley is a gigantic, tatted up, former Aussie Rules player who worked as a scaffolder in Northern Australia. Go ahead, it's the Southern Hemisphere.
What's in Northern Australia?
Nothing.
Okay.
Absolutely, but nothing. Okay. Additionally, scaffolding. Yeah. Just construct pylons and build scaffolding. That's what Lou Headley was doing.
Cool.
Lou Headley also owned a tattoo shop in Bali. Yeah. He owned a tattoo shop in Bali and played Aussie Rules, which is where he learned to kick good. Because remember, if you play Aussie Rules, you're instantly an NFL quality punter.
Right.
That's just how it works. The directional kicking is unreal in that game. Side note, most impossible sport I've ever tried to play. It is just like, it's just like holding an egg beater in one hand and a thrashing live ostrich in the other. You have no idea when to kick, when to throw, when to pass. You have no idea what's legal, even though they explain it to you 400 times. It's real hard. But yes, he worked for like oil and gas in Northern Australia, then had a tattoo shop in Bali for a while.
Sure.
Yeah, as one does. And then a kicking academy coach saw him and was like, hey man, you know who needs you? And that's how he ended up moseying his way to the city.
To like
Miami,
not
Florida.
Just America, but to America Plus.
He's had quite
to
the journey.
To America Premium. Like, do you ever feel for these... you know, there are kids like Brad Wing who, you know, go to punt and then, is Brad Wing actually Australian or did he just act Australian?
No, Brad Wing is an Aussie.
Okay. There are kids like Brad Wing who come to America and land in like the quintessential Southern college experience in a town like Baton Rouge. Do you ever feel for the kids who come over here for the skill of their feet and end up in, I'm just going to charitably call them an America minus town?
Well, Lou has had an interesting experience in that respect because...
Like, I feel like Bali to Miami feels like an okay learning curve.
Well, Brad Wing went from Melbourne, which Melbourne is a fantastic city, and then he went to Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. So I would say he's experienced the alpha and omega of what a city could be, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Headley went from Nowheresville to Bali. Then he went from Bali to City College of San Francisco.
Sure.
Then he went from there to Miami, Florida. I just want to say that I think Lou Hedley's idea of America is as weird as anybody's. Like, that he has the most, he has the wildest understanding of what America can be.
That's a real, that's a real spectrum.
Yeah. Like, he just needs to go to, like, a really, really, like, wild southern city, and I think we're completely, like, he's covered the most insane potential American experience already. So, yes, Lou Hedley is, I believe he's 29. So, as long as Lou's around, we still have a toe in the 20th century. Once he's gone and Sam Hartman eventually takes his eighth year of eligibility, we will now be consistently in solo-only 21st century rosters.
Okay.
That is until somebody's 54-year-old dad signs up to play for South Carolina or something.
Which...
Yeah. Can I smoke on the bench? That'd be good.
How about this? I don't know how to pronounce this gentleman's name. Keith, W-R-Z-U-S-Z-C-Z-A-K, went from the Australian National Pole Vault team to Eastern Kentucky to the Indianapolis Colts. Feels like quite a journey. Yes, we've lost them again.
There you go.
Not celebrating that because they're gone, but celebrating it because it's funny when they it's funny when we're in different planes of reality.
I'll let the authorities look into that.
Hey,
that's a good way to come back.
You're back now.
Where did I go? Where did I go?
Oh wow, how long have we been gone?
I don't know. No way to know.
Wow. I like that we have these divergent paths that will never be known to the other.
Oh,
this
God,
is a multiverse.
Sir, I'm sorry.
There, yeah, we're in the multiverse. This is what happened. We're in the end game now.
Yeah. We're talking about Acrisure Stadium, baby.
Wait, I don't think we spent enough time talking about how our emotional rooting interest for all of 2022 is going to be what team?
Our ACC rooting interest will be the North Carolina Tar Heels.
Oh. I want us to sit with that for a second.
Do we have a lead at halftime? Beware.
We picked them fair and square. Does this mean
oh,
that...
wow. The non-con includes App State and Notre Dame.
Why would you do that?
And a trip to Georgia State. That could be, you know. There are easier W's to schedule.
So you're saying we're tailgating.
Is Mac Brown going to start sapping y'all's life force?
That was my exact concern, Serber. Thank you for bringing that up.
That's it. Also, that trip to Georgia State. An ACC power on the road early. Oh,
ACC power has managed to schedule back-to-back road games in September against non-power teams.
Genius.
What is that about, Mac? They have three different pairs of back-to-back road games.
Now,
this is going to go great.
So what you're telling me is that Mac Brown made sure to lock down the crucial recruiting ground of Boone, North Carolina by taking UNC on the road there.
Yeah.
Like, in what – and I know these get scheduled out ahead of time, but in what year is going on the road to Boone a fine idea?
According to Mac Brown, 2022, baby.
I will say this.
No, but I mean, in what year for booking do you say, oh, yeah, we'll go to App State? Like, when is that a good – they got – I'm talking about look at when App State leveled up.
Yeah.
And – they had a much smoother transition into big boy ball than have a lot of other schools. At what point in App State's FBS history was booking a road game there
an okay
time for your throwaway scenario?
I think the funny thing about this game is the broadcast will have to sell it as a Mac Brown reunion because he was their head coach in 1983.
Yeah.
Only 1983.
I'm glad you brought that up because this is something they talked about on this NFL podcast called Split Zone Duo. It's kind of a niche podcast, but I highly recommend it. That a lot of times the explanations for these games there or, you know, well, I've left this athletic department for that athletic department. Let's get a home and home. But you don't have to play App on the road. It's bad for you.
I disagree. I think it's going to be great for our program.
Program.
We have a name change that I think is culturally significant because we are the internet's foremost pit podcast. And as the number one supporters of Pitt football on these here internets, we have to mourn the passing of Heinz Field. Heinz Field is no longer with us. Just in case you didn't understand what the perfect match of sponsor and stadium could be, this was it. Pittsburgh, a town where fries are stuffed into every dish and into the mouth of newborns as they arrive into the world. Here you go, kid. Have some fries. Here you go. They go right down. Go ahead. Have a little Iron City on there. Iron City mango. It's the finest one. Heinz Field is no more. It will now be known, and I'm sure people will definitely call it this because naming rights are always worth the purchase. Acrisure Stadium. Acrisure. A-C-R-I-S-U-R-E. The name of some kind of bullshit company. They're a global insurance broker. It's bullshit. Like, whatever it is, it's just bullshit.
No interest in learning what that is or what they do. They don't make things. Heinz makes things. And, like, we're all going to call it Heinz Field. That's it. But television broadcasts won't. So perhaps we should attune our ears to to what that might sound like.
By the way, the CEO of Acrisure is Greg Williams, who... Yes, Greg Williams. Hmm.
Double G Greg Williams?
So there's really no defense for this choice is what you're telling me.
There's... I'm saying, yes, there's no defense for this choice whatsoever. Additionally, he is from Lansing, Michigan.
Ooh.
So, you know, I just kind of
Lansing
wanna,
heavy.
Yeah, Lansing heavy. I just kind of want to ask, like, did our man just skip right past Michigan State as a potential donor? I don't know. I'd have to look into it because he says he's a Steelers fan and has been all his life. I do want to salute Mr. Williams for this. He lives in Michigan and he roots for the Steelers, meaning just went right over the Lions. Just like, nope, not even, I can't live with that. Can't do that to myself. Just went whoop, right there. So he does have acumen in more than one area of his life. One, decided to root for the Steelers. Two, started a complete bullshit company doing something that you have to take like 10 minutes to explain because they don't actually make anything. But we did get a number of passionate voicemails about this because in addition to taking away a condiment sponsor for the entire stadium for Pitt football, the big ketchup, we've now ensured that we have a name that no one from Pittsburgh will be able to pronounce. If you could just cue those up.
Oh, they can pronounce it.
We can't pronounce it properly.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. How you doing? This is Terry from over in Pittsburgh talking about how the Steelers changed the name of Heinz Field to Acrisure Stadium or something. I don't even know what that is. What's that even got to do with the Steelers? Myron Cope is rolling over his grave right now, man. I mean, Acrisure sounds like something mums takes to keep her bones from getting too soft for her old age. I don't get it. It's always going to be Heinz Field to me, Nat. This is a joke. I'm going to die so I saw you drink a couple of irons with the fellas at the mill, Nat. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, yeah, this is Timmy from down the way. Hey, I got an idea. As long as they're changing the name of stadium to Acrisure Stadium, why don't they change Mitch Trubisky's name to Ain't on Steelers No More? All right, I got to go.
Acrisure Stadium.
You just going downtown, watch them Steelers at Acrisure?
Yeah, I don't care if it's Hinesville. I don't care if it's Acrisure Stadium. As long as they still call down Renegade when they need a big stop, it's going to be good for everybody in time. Thank you.
Hey, these guys down here, they called Heinz Field Acrisure Stadium. That's real dumb. There's absolutely no way anybody's going to do anything about that. I'm still calling it Heinz Field. I hope they left the ketchup bottles up there. Just fill them up with scam dollars that are going to land on some sort of Ponzi scheme. There's no possible way that these guys got out here. Some companies from up there in Michigan? What? There's so many places down here. They should have named that for Permane Brothers, if you ask me. This has been this is AJ up here at Pittsburgh. We'll talk to you later.
Acrisure Stadium.
Worcestershire Stadium.
No.
Worcestershire?
Well, I'm talking to shut that forecast, huh? Well,
you're asking how to pronounce the new Pittsburgh Stadium, and I'm going to tell you exactly how it's pronounced, you know. Heinz Field.
What's up, Shutdown Fullcast? It's Arthur from Pittsburgh. I've had a few Icy Light mangoes tonight, but I got to tell Yinz how Yinzer would say Acrisure Stadium or whatever it's called now. Heinz Field. That's how we pronounce it because there's nothing more Yinzer than being out of date. Yinzer still think Charlie Batch is the Steelers' backup quarterback. Every time Mason Rudolph comes into the game, where's Charlie Batch? Why don't they put Charlie Batch in? Even if the name makes sense, you know, you probably need good insurance to host the Kenny Chesney concert. We are going to outlast whatever name you put on the stadium. We did it with Star Lake. We did it with the old mill down at Kennywood. Heinz Field forever.
Goddamn right.
That's beautiful.
Heinz.
Thank you, Pittsburgh. I can't.
Heinz.
My mouth won't make that shape.
I like the guy who just called it Acrisure. Acrisure Stadium.
I like the dude who called it Worcestershire Stadium. Because it's been left alone in a barrel by accident.
One of those guys said, thank ye.
Thank ye.
Thank ye.
Well, you remember, you see how that vowel elides down the coast, right? Like, that's how you get, like, thank you down here.
You just have to keep torquing it, right? Yeah. Just keep turning the knob until
keep
it comes
torquing
to
torquing your mouth.
Keep torquing your mouth until it works.
Yeah.
I also want to note the Lansing to Pittsburgh fandom map. It is a straight shot, almost a perfect line. Lansing to Detroit to Cleveland to Pittsburgh, meaning this gentleman went a little bit down the road, said, oh, no. Hopped across Lake Erie, said, oh, God, no. Got to Pittsburgh and said, got some trophies. Let me keep going. See what's on the other side of this line. And then reached Dan Snyderville, said, oh, God, back to Pittsburgh. So, ended up in the right place, I think.
Yes, because we do have to be careful what we say on this podcast, because the last time we talked about a derelict stadium, it caught fire the week following.
When was that?
That'd be when we were talking about RFK.
When were we talking about RFK?
We were talking about RFK and talking about, I believe, how much DC sucks, which I've never discussed here before.
Okay, the joke is that this was last week, but let's just...
Was it last week?
Yeah. It was a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Yes.
Caught fire. Completely caught fire because we have powers. So,
to everybody who accuses us of doing this on purpose, if we could do this on purpose, don't you think we'd be doing it a lot more?
Yeah, which is why we want to go ahead and offer this service. If you go ahead, hit us up, okay? You can leave a voicemail on the voicemail line, or you can email us if you want us to put just a bead out there, okay, to just put a hook out into the universe, cast it out there, and have your stadium burned down with no one harmed, but we'll talk about your stadium being burned down and see if it happens.
We're
just go ahead.
Some emails.
Yeah,
go ahead. Again, we are a Meadowlark Media production.
Yes.
I don't want to be accountable for arson.
Wouldn't be
arson.
I don't want
to be accountable for anything. That's why I do a podcast.
Spontaneous combustion. That's what this is. Spontaneous combustion.
Spontaneous human combustion.
Human.
If it's just going to be heat, it's definitely going to be Williams-Brice.
Oh, God, yes. How is that thing not just melted?
It's the aluminum cans on the ground outside.
You can't. Williams-Brice is already a kiln. If you put wet clay in that thing, 4 hours later you come back, you have a beautiful piece of pottery. And everyone inside is aged 30 years. All of them. How does that poor chicken not die? They trot him out for a day game. Sir Big Spur is just immune to radiation. Can you name Clemson's defensive coordinator? Without looking it up.
No.
Server is hand signaling Spencels. Scissors. Either that
two.
Or...
I can tell you
Oh, there's
that.
Two. Ah, it's twice as hard. They're both promoted from within. They're both promoted from within, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So our three college football experts... I had to look it up. So I did not know either prior to looking it up. All right? Who are the defensive coordinators at Clemson? Replacing Brent Venables, who was there forever and for every championship team that they had. Who are the defensive coordinators, Server?
I just know Wes Godwin, the short guy who looks a little like the Penguin, who is very smart and will not need a get-back coach. The other guy is old, and he's like Dabo's friend, which is like a much more predictable hire for Clemson. Like, not going after the smart guy, going after the buddy.
Going after another guy with an Alabama degree.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he might. I'm pretty sure he did go to Alabama. What's his name? I can't remember it.
Mickey Conn.
Mickey Conn, yeah, that guy.
Oh, wow, he even sounds like a bag man.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know that he has any, coaching ability.
Well.
That is correct. He was, the good news is that he's been around Clemson's defense for a while. That's very good. Bad news, he was an assistant under Mike DeBose. Hey! That's probably all right. I'm sure it's fine.
So he's vintage.
Yes, he's also Chase Bryce's uncle. If you remember former Clemson quarterback Chase Bryce. Yeah, he's his uncle. So connections galore. You say he's old. He's 50. He's 50. So
really?
He's a man.
He sucks so much. He seems like a 70.
Wow.
Okay, Server, I have a question for you and the others of you, if you want to throw it out. Is there, with the departure of Venables, you know, we were going to have to adjust something new with Clemson regardless. Is there a particular archetype of defensive coordinator that automatically gives you more confidence in him? Is it the super intense young guy with the clipboard? Is it the crusty middle-aged dude who's shaped like Dr. Robotnik? Is there a particular guy who, when you walk in the room and he says he's in control of the defense, you're like, oh, I feel better already?
Yeah, it's whatever the Venables types. It's the kind that looks like Skeletor.
Okay.
It's that type. Like he is perfect. He's like chiseled from stone for how a defensive coordinator should be. He just wants to blitz. He doesn't give a fuck. He's like, I'm fucking blitz you. Send the safeties. Fuck them.
This is probably growing up over Chavis, but I like my defensive coordinators to be like roly-poly but solid. Like they're round, but if you punch them, you're going to hurt your hand and not them.
Yeah. You want a defensive coordinator who is the dad who's like, go ahead and punch it. It's hard as a rock. They're
but still it
fat.
Is.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's because all the fat's subcutaneous. It's all under there, right? Yeah. It's all that beer fat. So, yeah, I like those defensive coordinators.
I'm not sure I trust a skinny defensive coordinator, Brent Venables' success notwithstanding.
I like a defensive coordinator who's skinny as long as I feel like the very stress and anger of being a defensive coach has eaten away every bit of spare flesh. That's what I feel like with Brent Venables, that Brent Venables was just so...
Like he orange sculled himself?
Right. Like he's just so enraged by the idea that you're trying to get 4 yards of offense on him per down that he's just like erasing every wasted atom so that he's a perfect defensive coordinating machine. I love those guys. I also, in a defensive coordinator, I do not like ragey defensive coordinators. I don't. I like Svengali calm defensive coordinators who are just calculating evil in their mind at all times.
Okay.
Those are my favorite guys. I may be slightly influenced by the experience of the last few years of having not one but two rah-rah defensive coordinators who made bad football in one way or another. No, I like defensive coordinators who are just like attempting to be chess masters, like, now you're dead.
I feel
and
like
you're dead.
That immediately brings to mind Mike Tomlin, which I know is not a college coach.
Yeah,
but all the things you just described, I saw him like scheming up how to fucking like really destroy an offense, as you were saying.
Yeah, I feel like you want your offensive coordinator. You want a younger person who maybe, you know, 28 or something, and they're, you know, super cheerful, super positive. They're on the computer a lot. They send a lot of positive affirmations to their players. Just you know, a really cheerful nerd. Whereas you want your defensive coordinator to be like 78 and they've been putting up with this shit for 60 years and they know the answer to everything. They learned it in 1974. The answer hasn't changed no matter what the little brainiac on the other side of the ball comes up with. And you know, they don't blow up a lot. Like I don't like a volcano coach really at any position. Maybe defensive line, but you want your defensive coordinator. I think Spencer has the temperament pretty much right. They don't like a lot of things, but they're not mad about them.
Norm Parker, old Norm Parker at Iowa. God rest his soul. My favorite dude. What did he call cover three? How many times did he blitz? Twice a season. Did he ever show a single emotion about anything? No. Nothing. Norm showed up, clocked in. Yeah. Called Cover 3 and went home. Those are my favorite dudes.
I think just like what Cerber is saying, to stick with Pittsburgh again, I think Dick LeBeau was the archetypical defensive coordinator to me. Zone blitz for like 40 years.
Yeah. By the way, Dick LeBeau also, as a tradition, got the entire team together and read them the night before Christmas.
What?
Yeah, Dick LeBeau would get the entire team together and get them all very serious.
Was this at Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay.
And have them all sit down, and he would read the night before Christmas to them and close it. And if you hear former players, not a single one of them was ever like, yeah, that was weird. They were all like, it was really nice. I liked it a lot.
I'm picturing them all sitting on the floor around
him. No, apparently, like, it was a locker room situation. So some of them were sitting like crisscross applesauce on the floor.
Oh, man.
Staring up, listening to their old coach, right? Go, oh, and I'm on the lawn. There arose such a clatter.
That gives me human feelings.
Keep in mind, this is like Joey Porter.
Yeah.
That's exactly the player my mind went to.
Yeah. Just Joey Porter, just hands on knees, just kind of leaning forward and nodding.
Yeah, LeVon Kirkland sitting there.
Rod Woodson.
That's beautiful.
Rod Woodson sitting there tearing up going, I'm going to go home. We're going to have a great Christmas, guys. Thank you, coach.
That's beautiful, man.
Offensive coordinator, I generally do like, again, personal bias here. I like offensive coordinators who are not geniuses, but who are dicks. If you give me an offensive coordinator 100% of the time, I want him to be a dick. I want it like Lane Kiffin is definitely an archetypical favorite offensive coordinator of mine, because is he going to signal touchdown at the snap? Yes. Yes, he's going to signal it. Is Steve Spurrier one of those guys? Yes, because recall that when asked what did he call by his head coach after they'd scored on a play, he looked back and said, touchdown! That's my favorite offensive coordinator. I want a spiteful, mean, petty, evil offensive coordinator at all times. I don't like a supervillain defensive coordinator. I want a supervillain offensive coordinator at all times.
I think the OC that I'm looking for here is a numbers person, not a words person. I don't want an OC who's written a book about their offense. Mm. I don't care about your plays. Fuck your plays. Fuck your system.
You want vibes?
I want an OC who they want to score points. They don't give a shit about, like, I'm known for calling this play out of this formation. I'm known for this formation. I'm known for this style of offense. Like, I don't care. Like the Patriots change their offense from year to year. No one cares who their OC is. It doesn't matter, right? They've been an air raid team. They've been a five tight ends team. You know, like, That's my kind of OC is like, what are they going to trot out? No one knows. No one cares. It's going to be pretty good. Because it's all based on, like, what does the other team hate the most? That's what we're doing today.
That's a solid ethos.
Yeah. I also like a Damn the Torpedoes OC who, if they're a triple guy and they're facing a team that has all 11 defenders in the box, they continue to run the triple. It's kind of frustrating at times, but I really do admire the, like, eat shit. Yeah, I don't care what you're going to do. I'm calling this. That, again, it's kind of a Spurrier thing because he's like, oh, you're doubling that guy? Well, keep throwing it to him. Fuck you. Love that. Absolutely love that in an offensive coordinator. If you're the offensive coordinator who happily is an accomplice to, well, what we want to do is shorten the game and, you know, hand the ball back to the defense. Get out of my fucking locker room. Get out. Get out of my state. I'm tasing you. I'm using bear spray on you. Get the fuck away.
Yeah, I want an OC who wants the ball and wants to do things with it.
Yeah.
For good or for bad.
For good or for bad, yeah. If you I like an OC who has bullshit trick plays. Adore that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I don't want just gentle. I don't want, like, well, we have a flea flicker in the playbook. No, 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 no. I want you to have gone, I saw a middle school pull this 3 weeks ago. Please.
Yeah, I think, like, as someone who doesn't care which team wins, even when my alleged favorite teams are in the game, like, I just want stuff to happen, entertaining stuff. Like, I don't give a shit who it's good for. I just want to see some shit I've never seen before. So if you're an OC who's just trying shit,
yeah,
now we're in business.
Yeah, I do also, I enjoy, if your offensive coordinator is older, I need him to be like David Cutcliffe as much as possible, okay? recently retired
I
Duke
knew
coach.
That, I
because,
knew that's who you were going to pull.
He was Mr. Bass Ackwards.
Kids, ask your parents. David Cutcliffe was not always the genteel retired, always having an air of retirement, even while not actually retired, which more power to him, Duke skipper. In his heyday, he was an absolute asshole with a clipboard, and it was so much fun to watch.
I put him in the same school as Norm Chow for when they lined up. You'd go, well, probably getting a run this down. Boop, it's a pass! And they're like, oh, I'm probably going to get a pass. Oh, it's a draw! Like,
if there were statistics tracked during the time on asshole routes, on jerk mm-hmm. routes, league leader, for at least a decade, without a doubt in my mind.
Yeah, if you could get a running back who ran a 4-3 lined up against a linebacker who ran a 5-2, David Cutcliffe was going to find a way to do that. Several plays in a row sometimes, if need be. If you've ever been snookered super hard by a senior citizen in cribbage, any card game, dominoes, mahjong, congratulations, you have met the David Cutcliffe offensive coordinator, because they're good at all of the dirty tricks and they never call tendencies.
So let me talk for just one moment about this part of his personality that he passed directly down to Peyton.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember, were you on Debatable a couple weeks ago when Dominique was talking about how hard it was to get one interception off of Peyton?
Yes.
And He Dominique Foxworth went out and laid out, was it him and Ed Reed?
Yes.
Was it when he was with the Ravens? Okay. So he was going through this entire sequence of events of how they conspired throughout the course of a game to lay a trap for Peyton to get a single interception, where, you know, we're going here. Oops, we're gonna look like we're messing up this one time and Ed Reed's gonna get the ball. And I texted Dominique afterwards. And I said, okay, that was really cool listening to this. Did that strategy ever work again? And he was like, not fucking once. And he said, I don't want to aspire cussing him, but he was like, that bleeping, bleeping, bleeping computer, referring to Peyton. Because like one, and this is another favorite Cutcliffe thing. Like once it worked against you once,
mm-hmm.
it's just gone.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it again.
Yeah, we'll go back to something we did 11 years ago, not something we did 11 weeks ago.
Yeah.
To see if it worked. Yeah. The bag.
It's like Peyton
deep.
Running the fucking bootleg.
Yeah.
Which he'll wait like 3 years to do.
The naked boot.
Which is always fun because it looks like an ant trying to run.
And no one's near him. This goes to my favorite guy who never should have run the triple option but ended up running it every now and then. That is George Godsey, who played in the 1990s or turn of the century for Georgia Tech, not known for his speed, mm-hmm. a nuclear engineering major who ran maybe a 5.5 on a good day. Tom Brady, like speed, if mm-hmm. we're talking about where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Regan was the offensive coordinator against Georgia. Godsey kept for like a 70-yard TD, and Godsey went back to Friedgen and said, hey man, do you like them Jets? You like them Jets? You see my tail lights? And Fridge goes, George, I don't think they knew you had the ball. just like the best coaching comeback ever, to be like, yeah man, that's how you tote the mail. And Fridge is like, I don't think they even believed it. I don't think that was even possible.
Surely no one would hand that guy the ball.
I kind of tackle everyone else
just to be sure.
I kind of love that as like a strategy, though.
Chris Leak scored a TD or a long run against LSU that way. He kept the ball.
I remember this.
And nobody believed he had it.
Oh, God.
Because he was so hesitant to even call a sneak, much less carry the ball.
Do my eyes deceive me? Is that guy carrying the ball? Surely they do.
I think maybe defenders just sit back and watch it for a minute.
Like no.
Hey, man, look at that. That's amazing. Good for him. All right, go get him. Because they do
have
time
for
to catch
a second,
up.
I have to think for a second. They're like, oh, God, this is going to look so fucking stupid on us if he pulls it
So I wanted to ask Server one more, since we covered the defensive coordinators. I said I liked supervillain-looking offensive coordinators. Since Clemson's had their entire coaching staff turnover in the past, 3 years, who is Clemson's offensive coordinator? I have spoiled this somewhat, but it leads me to another point. Who is it?
It's Brandon Streeter.
That is correct.
He went 3-8 as the starting quarterback for the Clemson Tigers, and Tommy West got fired. And then the beautiful two-quarterback system of Rich Rodriguez took place between he and Woodrow Dantzler.
Hey.
Yeah. And Woody fucking rules, like, still to this day. Woodrow Dantzler is my favorite Clemson quarterback.
Same.
And, but yeah, Brandon Streeter really sucked. He was not good, but I fucking loved him when I was like 8 years old. He was like the head coach at Richmond, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So he does have some experience, but this is very much like a Clemson thing. Like, you went here, you have job here now.
You have talent,
it's
right?
It's so fucking predictable.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, CJ Spiller is the next offensive coordinator.
That is correct. It will be somebody who actually played for them. This is my question, which a two-part question. One, I have included in the chat a picture of Brandon Streeter. Please describe the shape of his head. I believe he has a peanut-shaped head.
Oh my god. That looks like it. Did you photo? That looks photoshopped.
That is the official headshot.
It looks
headshot.
Like you like pinched him inward at the temples and pushed his eyes closer together.
No,
it's like
that
a fun
is,
time mirror. Like a like.
He
a
looks like a circus
mirrors.
Peanut.
Yes, Clemson, you got a circus peanut for an offensive coordinator.
You know that weirdly makes me more confident in him.
It does because his brain is so large; it's beginning to bulge from the side yeah. with mm-hmm. plays with potential designs.
He looks like a real life Beavis.
Again, I think Beavis would be an okay offensive coordinator. I don't trust him on defense because he's not going to keep shape or keep the scheme going. But on offense, he'll be like, ah, open.
Yeah. Yeah, the relentlessness, I feel like would really serve him there.
I think he looks like old Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is very quietly sad.
Podcasting, a visual medium. But yes, Brandon Streeter, Jimmy Neutron, a.k.a.
Look, they got through. I trust the audience. They got through the Quebec stop signs. They can get through this.
Yeah.
I think, and also, I don't really feel bad about, you know, having some fun with the shape of this person's head. Surely making six figures a year is fine.
Yeah. He's wealthy. It's fine.
He's a Clemson assistant. He might be making $7 million a year.
It's
they'll
true.
Pay you.
Got lake yeah. money.
Yeah, they'll give you lake money, right? As long as you keep Dabo as wins, right?
So you can buy a lake. Is that what lake money is?
Yeah.
Oh, y'all, I wish we were at the lake.
I would buy, if I lived in South Carolina, I would 100% buy alcohol and drug abuse lake. That is what I would buy. Lake. It is. Where is alcohol and drug abuse lake? It's a real thing.
That's what I was asking you to explain.
Yes, yes. It's in Richland.
This just sounds like a really flat
joke. It's not
joke.
Far. No, it's not far from Clemson, actually. It's in Richland County. And it is...
that's Columbia,
Columbia,
baby.
So it's not far from Columbia. Yeah. It used to be... It is now Village Lake. But at one point, it was called Alcohol and Drug Abuse Lake. It is a reservoir and a tributary of the Crane Creek River. So yes, its owner was the South Carolina Department of Mental Health eventually renamed it to that. But it was originally named after a nearby residential treatment center for those with substance abuse issues. So it was Alcohol and Drug Abuse Lake.
Thank you for those of us with substance abuse issues.
Gotta bring it back.
Yeah.
Hey, lakes are representation.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is my point. We're talking about this man's head and how he used to play for Clemson, and that's who's in charge of the program now. And Clemson won the ACC 6 years in a row and didn't make the playoff.
Yep.
They had a quarterback who at the end of the season could not hit the broadside of a barn and had a negative touchdown interception ratio in DJ Uiagalelei, who... highlight myself being wrong here. After I saw him play at Notre Dame, you're like, that man's a god. That's the next one. That's a bigger Trevor Lawrence. He's going to be incredible. And then he had no idea what he was doing.
Trevor Lawrence.
Yes. Trevor Lawrence.
Travis Lawrence.
Yes.
God, I got nothing.
Well, yeah. Clemson's run is coming to an end because we have lined up behind Mac Brown's UNC this year.
What does this mean for our personal emotional relationships with Mac Brown as the season goes through? Do we encourage the sucking of the life force from opposing coaches in his little post-game clutch chicken clucky handshakes?
I will definitely pay more attention to UNC. They were, you know, they were entertaining last year, and now we have pride is on the line, our reputations as football experts is on the line here. So,
God, Ryan doesn't listen to this show, and I am so excited for him to find out that we've signed him up to root for UNC.
That is pretty good. Each preview week, one of us should sit out and then come back to be horrified to discover a team we have to pay attention to this year.
If the Hank keeps going, we'll have some involuntary sit-outs next week. Not to worry.
I just wanted to go ahead and play this game, which is if North Carolina is ahead at the half or are they behind at the half? This is Mac Brown football.
Oh, no. Okay.
If UNC is behind at the half, I have nothing but confidence in their performance. If UNC is ahead at the half, I would go ahead and poise myself over the nearest lip of a tall building because there's absolutely no way they're going to keep it because Mac Brown has never changed. People will be like, yeah, man, at Texas, he really embraced the spread offense. No, he didn't. He got Vince Young, and they ran a zone read, and Vince Young did the rest. That was it. This man is still three downs, run on third down, and punt. That is still Mac Brown, and it works. In case you doubt it, go look at Mac Brown's net worth. It works. If you are a young coach and you have all of these brilliant ideas, what you should do is become a suspenders and belt wearing coach, and you will coach for 40 years, right? Recruit and punt on third down every time. Or you too can be Mac Brown, Mr. February, as Steve Spurrier once called him.
Wow.
Had a good signing day, didn't he? Huh? Again? Ah, good for him. Beat him by 20 points next year.
Didn't he also call him Mr. Football?
Yeah, Mr. Football. That's Mr. Football to you. Yeah. Off-season champ every year.
What a bitch.
That was UNC last year.
It was.
You know you're an off-season champ when your coach is complaining in like week three about how highly you were rated concerning the season.
Poison. Got that poison in him.
That came out fast, too. Mac had that ready. It's not your fault you thought I was cool. It's the media's fault. Blame them. They said I was cool.
Now, we are the media overrating Mac Brown. Somebody has to do it every year. It's happened every year for the last, 13, 14 years. Mm-hmm. And they said it couldn't be done this year, but the shutdown full cast has arrived. Someone is overrating Mac Brown.
It's about time. Also, this sets up.
This is just the spiritual sequel to Texas going 9-3.
This also
UNC is going 9-3.
9-3.
It even rhymes. You're welcome.
They could.
With the third loss being the loss to NC State at the last second.
This is a pleasant time.
After NC State's lost like three games by 2 points. Don't ask how that works. It can happen.
Win the Coastal. Lose to Georgia State.
Oh, that's beautiful. Cursed, but beautiful.
That's it. That's exactly how it's going to happen.
I love it.
Go Pack.
Endorse.